Evening, everybody.
Evening.
Tonight, we're going to continue our occasional Sunday evening series on lessons from the Holy Land. And up to this point, we have been working our way essentially clockwise around Palestine, starting with Caesarea Maritima on the coast. We went up into Galilee, Galilean Peninsula, around the Sea of Galilee, down through the Jordan Valley, into the Judean wilderness, around the Dead Sea, to Beersheba, and then we've been working our way up to Jerusalem. And now we are starting tonight, the remainder of our lessons, however many there will be in and around the city of Jerusalem. I'm going to start tonight, though, not with an archaeological site or not even a biblical site or not really even a site at all, but I want to start off by looking at a model that is present today in the Israel Museum, and it is a model of the city of Jerusalem just after the time of Jesus. And while, again, this is not a biblical site, not a site, an archaeological site, this model is an incredible tool for understanding the context of the city in which Jesus, when Jesus was in Jerusalem, which was not a lot. I mean, most of the time in his ministry, he was in Galilee, but he was in Jerusalem a fair amount. And this is, you know, roughly what the city would have looked like during the time of Jesus, okay? Now, before we look at the model, a few things about it. This is a 1/50th scale replica of the city of Jerusalem from what they would say is the late Second Temple period. What does that mean? That means this would have been from the period of the temple built by Herod the Great. We've talked a lot about Herod the Great in this series. And most likely this the time period would have been around mid-60s AD. How do we know that? Well, we know that because of the state of the walls in this model. We'll talk more about that in just a minute. But roughly think about this as like 66 AD, which, by the way, 66 AD is when the Great Jewish Revolt began, which resulted in Jerusalem being destroyed just 4 years later. So the snapshot that you're seeing, we're going to see in this model of Jerusalem, this is roughly the way Jerusalem would have looked for 4 years before Jerusalem was burned to the ground. But anyway, now, without getting into all of these details, because I don't think they're terribly important. I've got some information up there about who designed it, who built it. But a few things from there that are important. This model was built relying heavily on descriptions of what Jerusalem was like from Flavius Josephus, the Jewish historian who wrote for the Romans. And his descriptions of the city and the things within the city were relied on heavily to build this model. It was originally built and placed in the lobby of a hotel called the Holy Land Hotel, and in 2006 was moved to its present-day location, which is in the Israel Museum. This is the model. Now, this was taken with as far away from it as I could get with the widest camera angle I could possibly use, which was the wide-angle lens on my phone, and I still could not get the whole thing in the frame. And to give you a sense of the size of this model, I want you to notice the people who are standing on the other side. This thing is huge. Again, 1/50th scale. But this is the view of the city as if you were standing on the Mount of Olives. So if you're standing on the Mount, if you were looking at the city of Jerusalem, you know, just after the time of Jesus, standing on the Mount of Olives, looking to the west. So this is the eastern side of the city, looking to the west. And on the eastern side of the city, you have the Temple Mount, which is the most prominent thing in view. Between the Mount of Olives, which would roughly be here, not represented in the model, but between the Mount of Olives and Jerusalem is the valley of the Brook Kidron, or the Kidron Valley. You've probably heard of the Kidron Valley mentioned numerous times in Scripture, mostly as a boundary But that valley separates the Mount of Olives from the city of Jerusalem. But there is the Temple Mount. Now, we're going to drill in on some of these areas within the model. And mostly what we're going to focus on is the Temple Mount, the area to the south of the Temple Mount, and the area just immediately to the north of the Temple Mount. Okay, so that's where we're going to drill in. So first thing, let's talk about the Temple Mount itself. Now this, this complex was built by Herod the Great. This was, you know, we've talked about through this whole series that the fingerprints of Herod the Great are all over Palestine even to today. We've seen from Caesarea Maritima to Masada to Herodium, all these incredible things that he built that still, the remnants of them are there today. The Temple Mount in Jerusalem was another one of his showpieces. And there are remnants of the Temple Mount, which we'll talk about in a later lesson, that are still there today. But this is, you know, again, based on the descriptions of Josephus, this is what the Temple Mount would have looked like. Now, we're going to drill in here and look at some individual pieces. But within this, you have the mount surrounded by colonnades on all sides. These are like porches with columns and a roof. And one of those is very, very important, especially in the book of Acts, well, even in the time of Jesus, but also in the book of Acts, and that is Solomon's portico. So, you know, we're going to drill into some of these, but what we're looking at, the Temple Mount, on the left-hand side with this red roof, you have the royal portico. In the upper right-hand corner, which would be in the northwest corner of the Temple Mount, you have the Fortress Antonia. We'll talk more about that in just a minute. On this side of the Temple Mount, which you cannot see in this picture, the colonnade on this side was Solomon's portico. And in Scripture, it is mentioned that Jesus was in Solomon's portico or Solomon's colonnade. It was mentioned that the early church listened to the teachings of the apostles in Solomon's portico. All of that would have taken place on this side of the Temple Mount. And then in the middle, you've got a structure, but around that structure was what was referred to as the court of the Gentiles. If a Gentile went to the Temple Mount, this area here was as far as they could go. They could not go inside these inner walls, okay, surrounding the temple. The temple is this small structure here in the middle. They could not enter into this area. The Gentiles were restricted to these areas on the outside. So, drilling in a little closer, this is a little closer to the temple being here in the middle, or in the back of this structure, this is where the holy place and the most holy place would have been. In front of that, you see this courtyard. This is known as the court of women. This is as far as women, Jewish women, were allowed to go. Significantly, though, inside of the court of women is where the treasury would have been located. So, think about the story of the widow's mite in Luke 21. The story of when Jesus came to Jerusalem for the Feast of Booths in John 7 and John 8. He's teaching, he's arguing with the Pharisees. It says all of that took place in the treasury. That would have been in this area. Now, dividing the court of women from the court of the Gentiles, which is this larger area, is this gate. You notice this little door on the front of this wall right here. That is the gate. Beautiful. So in Acts chapter 3, when you read about the lame man who had been lame since birth, who was at the gate, beautiful, asking for money, and Peter and John stopped and talked to him and ultimately healed him, this would have been the gate. Again, it separated the court of the Gentiles from the court of the women. Okay, that's the gate. Beautiful. This, as I mentioned earlier, in the northwest corner of the Temple Mount, the Fortress Antonia. The Fortress Antonia would have been kind of the headquarters for the Roman government in Jerusalem. This is most likely the place where Jesus appeared before Pilate in Matthew 27, among other of the Gospels. But when Jesus was taken from the Sanhedrin to Pilate, most likely he was taken to the Fortress Antonia. Also, in Acts 22, at the end of Paul's third missionary journey, when Paul is back in Jerusalem, Paul is arrested because of a riot that has started among the Jews when Paul went to the temple. We won't go too deep into that story, but Paul is arrested by the Romans, and it says that he is taken to the barracks. And on his way into the barracks, up the steps into the barracks, he asks if he can address the crowd. Most likely, those barracks are also the Fortress Antonia. So again, very likely that some very, very significant things happened within the Fortress Antonia in the city of Jerusalem. This, as I mentioned earlier, this area with the red roof, royal promenade, the royal colonnade, nothing significant in Scripture that is mentioned is happening there, just a very prominent thing because of its covering with the red roof. Now, I'm switching perspectives for just a second, okay? I'm going down now outside the Temple Mount, looking at the southern side of the Temple Mount, okay? So this is the south wall of the Temple Mount, and I want you to notice that there are steps leading up into these two doors which lead up to the Temple Mount. These are known today in archaeological terms as the Southern Steps. And some of the Southern Steps still exist today. We'll talk about that in a future lesson. This was the main entrance to the Temple Mount. And so when we talk about the Southern Steps later, remember that every time Jesus went to the temple, he had to go up those steps. And those steps are there. You can walk on them, you can sit on them today. They are there. That would have been the primary entrance to the Temple Mount. Now, I'm going to shift from the south side of the Temple Mount to the west side, just moving back a little bit. This is the western wall of the Temple Mount. Two significant things on here, one that you will be familiar with, one that I would be shocked if you're familiar with. We'll talk more about it later. But you've probably heard of the Western Wall or the Wailing Wall that's in Jerusalem today. The Wailing Wall is a remnant of this Temple Mount. It is a remnant of the western retaining wall from the, you probably can't see this, but there's actually a little red arrow right here, which shows that, hey, this is the section where what is today known as the Western Wall is located. So, you know, thousands of Jews every day go to the Wailing Wall to pray, and that's because that is one of the pieces that still remains of Herod's Temple Mount, and that is the Western Wall. This right here is another significant archaeological item known of as Robinson's Arch, which we'll talk more about that later, about who Robinson was. Robinson, not a biblical character, but Robinson. This arch, the discovery of this arch, was one of the things that led them to understand that what this location was, that this was the Temple Mount, because it was exactly as described by Josephus. Okay, so now we are completely looking at the western side of the Temple Mount. I've showed this angle for one reason, and that was to show the colonnade that's on the eastern side. That is Solomon's colonnade. So in, for example, Acts 3 and Acts 5, when you read about teaching happening in Solomon's portico or Solomon's colonnade, that would have been in this columned, roofed porch just on the western side. On the eastern side of the temple. Okay, that makes sense? Okay, now we are moving to the north side of the Temple Mount. On the north side of the Temple Mount, you have this two-level pool. This is a representation of the Pool of Bethesda. The Pool of Bethesda, you can read about in John chapter 5, where Jesus healed the lame man. This was where those were gathered around the pool, waiting for the Spirit to stir the waters, and he was waiting for someone to push him in. All of that took place in the Pool of Bethesda. The Pool of Bethesda has been uncovered, and we'll talk about that. Identified in John 5 as having a five-roof colonnade. You have one roof, two roof, three roof, four roof, five roof, I believe is the way they counted that. And you read about that again in John chapter 5, which would have been located, according to John, John 5, located near the Sheep Gate, and that's in Jerusalem at this time, not Jerusalem today, but located near the Sheep Gate, which would have been just north of the temple. Now, we're moving from the north back to the south. And the reason why I want to show you this is because you notice this area to the south of the temple. Here is the outer wall. By the way, I didn't mention this earlier. One of the reasons why we know, or why we say that this model is from roughly the 60s AD, is because in this model, the outer wall is completed. When Jesus was alive, the outer wall was not finished. Okay? The outer wall was begun by Herod Agrippa I. Herod Agrippa I was the one who died in Acts chapter 12, the one who was eaten by worms, the one who had James killed. That was Herod Agrippa I. He began the outer wall around the city of Jerusalem. It was finished by his son, Herod Agrippa II, who we've talked about in this series already. Herod Agrippa II, the one who Paul appeared before when he appeared before Felix and Festus and Agrippa, that's Herod Agrippa II. Agrippa II is the one who finished the wall in the early 60s AD. In the time of Jesus, this outermost wall would not have existed. And when Jesus was taken outside the walls to be crucified, it would have been outside what is known as the second wall. The city of Jerusalem in 66 AD would have had three walls. And so this outer wall would not have been completed until roughly 30 years after the time of Jesus. But the reason why I show you this is that if you'll notice, there's an outer wall, and then you come in and it's hard to see here, but there's an inner wall right here. And this little sliver between these two walls is roughly what the footprint of the city of Jerusalem would have been during the time of David. So if you want to see where Jerusalem started, or when in Joshua, we studied about Jerusalem was still controlled by the Jebusites, and then ultimately David is going to capture it from the Jebusites. The city that David built was just right here. And then his son Solomon built the temple up on top of the hill, Mount Moriah, up at the top, above the city of Jerusalem. But the city of David would have been roughly in this area right here. Okay, does that make sense? All right, now, imagine taking the camera and just turning it kind of around, and now we've got the city of David roughly on our right-hand side, and we are looking up, we are on the very south end of the city of Jerusalem, looking to the north, looking up through the city of David, the city that would have been the footprint during David's time, up toward the Temple Mount. You see the southern steps and the two gates there going into the Temple Mount. In the lower right-hand corner, you have represented the Pool of Siloam. We just talked about the Pool of Bethesda where the lame man was healed. The Pool of Siloam is where the blind man was healed, where he was asked to, Jesus made the spittle out of, used a spittle and mud to put in his eyes and told him to go wash in the Pool of Siloam. All of that we read about in John chapter 9, that would have taken place here. We now know, because the Pool of Siloam has been uncovered, that this model is not exactly right, but roughly where it would have been located. And so we'll talk more about the Pool of Siloam later and the archaeology around that. But then also I want you to notice that there is a road that goes up, and it's a road with stairs, and it is a road that is lined on either side with buildings. But there is a road that connects the Pool of Siloam with the Temple Mount, the southern steps. And this is a road that only within the last 3 years has been uncovered by archaeologists. They had to dig down a long way and they've uncovered this road. It is known as the Pilgrimage Road today. This is a road that the priest would have walked during the Feast of Booths. We'll talk more about that when we talk about the Pilgrimage Road. But we know that Jesus went to Jerusalem during the Feast of Booths in John 7. And so, this would have been a place of very prominent ceremony that would have taken place during the Feast of Booths that we know Jesus would have been a witness to when he was in Jerusalem in John 7. Okay. Last couple of things, and these may not mean anything to you yet, but they will in a future lesson. Okay. I'm back to looking at the western side of the Temple Mount and the western side of the Fortress Antonia. And I want you to notice that on the western side you have a wall, okay? This is the second wall, okay? Remember I talked about how by 66 AD there were three walls. Time of Jesus there were only two that were complete. This wall, which is very close to the Temple Mount, this wall during the time of Jesus would have been the outermost wall, okay? When you visit Jerusalem today, there are two places you can go which both are traditional places for the tomb of Jesus. Okay, and I emphasize traditional. Do we know where Jesus was buried? No, we have no idea where Jesus was buried. We have a reasonable amount of confidence that it would have been outside the city walls. Not the third wall, but the second wall. Okay. One of those two places, though, that is a traditional place where they have uncovered a first century tomb and they built a magnificent church building around it. As I've said before, if you want to know, hey, they think something happened here, they built a church there. Okay. This church is known as the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. We'll talk about that church in a later lesson. I'm not going to talk about a ton of traditional places because there are dozens and dozens and dozens of traditional places in the city of Jerusalem. We're only going to talk about a very, very few. But the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, if you see this pile of rocks right here, just outside the city wall, that would be the location where the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is today. Okay? Again, we'll talk about that in a later lesson. Now, the second traditional location is known of as the Garden Tomb. And one of the reasons why they decided we need a different traditional place is because today, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is inside the city walls, and people were thinking, hey, well, it has to be outside the city walls if it's going to be the tomb of Jesus. So we got to pick a different place. That's one of many reasons. I'm oversimplifying it. Not realizing that the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is indeed outside of what would have been the city walls in that time. But there is another location where a first century tomb was located. Oh, sorry, I drilled in a little closer so you can see the rocks. But there is another location. We're now on the north side of the Temple Mount in the Fortress Antonia, and you see the outside of the second wall. And over here you have another pile of rocks. When we talk about the Garden Tomb, which again is a first century tomb, that is the location where the Garden Tomb is, kind of north of the city. So we got west of the city and north of the city, okay? So keep these as placeholders. I debated about when to cover the model. I decided to cover it first because as we go through specific places, I will cut out little snippets of this and say, hey, remember we looked at this? This is what it looks like today, okay? When we go through that, all right? So that's the model. Now we're going to move from the model to talking about a real place. And this is one of those where there's no debate about where this is located, and that's the Mount of Olives. The Mount of Olives, while mentioned in the Old Testament, is so woven into the story of Jesus. So many significant things happen on and around the Mount of Olives. This is a place that is, we'll talk about this in a minute, while not holy, I don't believe in the concept of a spot on earth being holy. It is important because some of the most important things that happened in history happened on the Mount of Olives. Okay? Very, very important. So, back to another map. So now we're in the city of Jerusalem. You probably can't see this, but just to the east of Jerusalem, you see there is a place listed as Bethany. Okay, Bethany, a place visited by Jesus, would have been on the eastern side of the Mount of Olives. So you can see the Mount of Olives in this map, very close to Jerusalem. And then we'll drill in even closer. This is a rough map of the city of Jerusalem during the time of Jesus. You see the Temple Mount here, the Fortress Antonia. You've got the Kidron Valley. And then some modern things like the Garden Tomb, which again is an old tomb but discovered more recently, to the north of Jerusalem. But on the eastern side of the Kidron Valley, you have the Mount of Olives. Now you have a western slope and an eastern slope of the Mount of Olives. And on the eastern slope of the Mount of Olives, you have Bethpage and Bethany. Every time Jesus visited Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, he was going to Bethany, which was at the Mount of Olives. So Jesus, Scripture tells us that it was his custom. Every time he went to Jerusalem, he visited the Mount of Olives. So very, very important in the life of Jesus. And I've got on here, it's a ridge running on the east side of Jerusalem. It's separated from Jerusalem by the Kidron Valley. Today, the Mount of Olives is covered in Jewish tombs. All of the tombs are above ground, okay? And it is the largest Jewish cemetery in the world. We'll see pictures of that in just a minute. It's also covered in churches, church buildings. I'm not going to go through those tonight. I've got a listing of a bunch of them. I've visited a few of them. Some of them I have no, I mean, I really don't have an interest in visiting any of them. But I've been to a few of them. And they're all over. They're all over the mountain. They're all over the Mount of Olives. We will talk about one tonight, and that is the Church of All Nations, because it is located next to the traditional site of Gethsemane. But it's the largest Jewish cemetery in the world. But why would it have been called the Mount of Olives? Well, in Jesus' time, most likely it was just covered in olive trees. Rather than covered in buildings and tombs, it was probably just covered in olive trees. Today, there are very, very few olive trees on the Mount of Olives. We'll talk more about that in just a minute. Now, I'm going to breeze through some of this. As I mentioned, the Mount of Olives is referred to in the Old Testament, but mostly we know about the Mount of Olives from the New Testament. I just talked about how Scripture tells us that it was his custom to go to the Mount of Olives. Luke 22 tells us that was his custom when he came to Jerusalem. Every time he went to visit Lazarus, Mary, and Martha, he was going to the Mount of Olives. But I want to zero in on about four things, related to the Mount of Olives. Three of these significant events that happened on the Mount of Olives during the last week of Jesus' life. Okay. These three are three of the reasons why I say, while not a holy place, it's an important place because of these things that happened. The first one of these that took place during the last week of Jesus' life, we refer to as the triumphal entry, where Jesus instructed the disciples to go to the area of Bethany and Bethpage. They found a donkey, and from that area on the eastern side of the Mount of Olives, he rode over the crest of the Mount of Olives, overlooking the city of Jerusalem. When he came to the place where the road goes down the Mount of Olives, that means the road that goes down into the city of Jerusalem, that's where the people were lining the road, and they were laying down the palm branches, and they were shouting, Hosanna. All of that took place when he came over the crest of the Mount of Olives and rode the donkey down toward the city of Jerusalem. Okay, all that happened in the Mount of Olives. Now, while he was up on top, Luke tells us that he wept over the city of Jerusalem. He wept over the city of Jerusalem. And when I'm standing up there, I'm thinking about the view that he had, looking over the city. You can think about the model. It doesn't look like that today, but you can kind of see where those pieces would have been and imagining Jesus coming over the crest of the hill and weeping over the city, the people that had not accepted him. The second big thing that happened on the Mount of Olives during the last week of Jesus' life, sometimes referred to as the Olivet Discourse. We read about this specifically, Matthew 24 and 25. But just to set the context, in Matthew 23, you have the seven woes that Jesus gives to the Pharisees. Okay? And Jesus is there around the temple. And Jesus, at the end of 23, had kind of given a little bit of a foreshadowing of what was going to come about, the place where these Pharisees live, that this place is going to be no more. And the disciples, the apostles, they're oblivious, right? They have no idea. And so in the beginning of 24, they're walking around the temple, and they're what? They're in awe of the structure of the temple. Now, again, it was a magnificent place built by Herod the Great, and they're in awe of this structure. And then Jesus goes from just simply foreshadowing to being very explicit and said, there's going to be a time when there's not going to be one stone left upon the other. Remember that, because we're going to look at some of those stones that were cast down off the top of the temple when the Romans burned it to the ground. They're still there today and still have the burn marks on them. But Jesus said that, and then the disciples, then with Jesus, they then went out to the Mount of Olives, and they said, when will these things be? Well, when is this event going to happen where you talk about there's not going to be one stone left upon the other? And what will be the sign of your coming and the close of the age? Now, it took Jesus two chapters to answer that question. And in answering that question, he talks about what I believe a big section talking about when the destruction of Jerusalem is going to happen. He then talks about his coming again, which he says, no one knows, not even me, only the Father. And then he says, well, you know, what do you do with that information that no one knows? You have to always be ready. And he tells some allegories, he tells some parables, including in chapter 25, the parable of the wise and foolish virgins and the parable of the talents. You know, we don't usually think about those two parables in the context of Jesus answering this question. But they were both answered, part of the answer to the question of how do we be ready for his return. All of that took place on the Mount of Olives. And I just love that, you know, thinking about Jesus told the parable of the talents. He told the parable of the wise and foolish virgins. He talked about the destruction of Jerusalem while he was sitting with the disciples there on the Mount of Olives. The third thing, which is the one that probably, if you think about what happened, Mount of Olives, maybe immediately popped in your head that this is where he prayed. In religious circles, they refer to it as the prayer of agony, but the prayer in the Garden of Gethsemane was on the Mount of Olives. We don't know exactly where. Today, there is a traditional spot, but we don't know where that was. But he prayed the prayer of agony, the prayer where he was... He had asked the disciples to keep watch, and they fell asleep, and he kept coming back to pray, and he was so distraught that his sweat was as drops of blood, right? And he prayed that this cup would pass from me. That all took place on the Mount of Olives. Now, after the resurrection of Jesus, another incredibly significant event that we actually read about this morning in the sermon, as we talked about what the disciples did after the ascension of Jesus. Well, where did Jesus ascend? He ascended from the Mount of Olives. They came back to Jerusalem, to the upper room, after they had been on the Mount of Olives, and they had witnessed the ascension of Jesus. So you think about, I mean, just those four things. Unbelievable, the events that happened in the life of Jesus on the Mount of Olives. And Zechariah prophesied that when Jesus comes back, he's going to come back to the Mount of Olives. So, very, very significant place in the story of Jesus. And when I say story, I don't mean like myth. I mean like the narrative of his life here on this earth. Very, very significant. Now, this is a view of the old, quote, old city of Jerusalem standing on the crest of the Mount of Olives today. Okay? I don't know if we're going to get to it tonight, but at some point we're going to talk about the old city. I put that in quotes, old city. Old is relative. Okay? But this is standing on the Mount of Olives, looking to the west. So this is the same view that we started off as with the model of the city of Jerusalem. But Jerusalem looks very different today. Okay, very, very different today. We'll talk more about that later. But looking toward the old city of Jerusalem with the modern city of Jerusalem in the background where you see the skyscrapers. Okay, but this is the Mount of Olives, and you can see covered in tombs. All right? And this is a picture of the four of us looking toward the Temple Mount as it exists today, the outer wall today in the Temple Mount. I got an opportunity to speak to the group up on top of the Mount of Olives, and I essentially just went through the same things that I just told you about those four significant events that took place on the Mount of Olives, and how it's easy for, you know, when I'm standing there to think about, you know, Jesus weeping over the city. You're standing and looking, it's an incredible vista of the city that you see today, but I'm standing there weeping over the city. And this was a special moment that I had no idea someone took a picture of until much later. But after we had kind of met as a group and we talked together, I grabbed Olivia and the girls, and I kind of took them away from the group, and I just said, I just want you to stop and breathe for a second. And I said, again, similar thing to what I said to you earlier, I don't believe this is a holy place, but I want you to think about what happened here. You know, about the triumphal entry, Jesus weeping over Jerusalem, Jesus predicting the destruction of Jerusalem, talking about his return, Jesus asking that the cup be, you know, taken from him, weeping, I mean, praying with sweat that comes out as drops of blood, and then Jesus, the disciples, the apostles, watching him ascend into heaven from that mountain. And I was talking to them about that, and unbeknownst to me, there was somebody behind us that took a picture of it. And it's a very grainy picture, but it's very special to me because it was a special moment for to share with my girls. as we looked over the city of Jerusalem. Now, I mentioned that there's today it's covered in tombs, the largest Jewish cemetery in the world. If you drill in closer to these tombs, you'll see many of them are covered with small rocks. This is a tradition. When someone goes to visit the tomb, they will leave a rock just to say, I was there. It's a physical evidence to show, hey, I came and visited you in your tomb. Now, this is a view from the city of Jerusalem looking outward toward the Mount of Olives. And again, you can see just row after row after row of tombs going up the Mount of Olives, up the hillside. Now, this is not the Mount of Olives, but I wanted to show you this. This is the Kidron Valley, okay? So this is the Kidron Valley as it exists today, separating the old city of Jerusalem from the Mount of Olives. Now, across from the Kidron Valley, there is a traditional spot that is known of as the Garden of Gethsemane. We do not know where the Garden of Gethsemane was, okay? This is a traditional spot. But there are, within the Garden of, the quote, Garden of Gethsemane, there are, there is a beautiful garden that has 8 olive trees in it. Probably some of the few olive trees that actually still exist on the Mount of Olives. But there are 8 olive trees that are ancient for olive trees. I don't know much about olive trees, but from what I'm told, these trees are, the youngest ones are 800 years old, which is very old for olive trees, but not old enough to have been there during the time of Jesus, right? These are not trees that Jesus prayed under, but this is a traditional location. This is one of these ancient olive trees, and let me tell you, I've seen a lot of olive trees in Israel. This one is probably 20 times the size of any olive tree from the size of the trunk. I mean, these things are cared for day and night to keep them alive, and they have grown quite large. The only church building I'm going to show you that's on the Mount of Olives is the Church of All Nations. This is a church building that, the reason why it's called the Church of All Nations is because there were many nations that contributed to it, to the construction of it. It is located right next to the Garden of Gethsemane. Again, I put that in quotes. We don't know what the garden, where the garden is. But I want to show you this. Inside the building, there is covered with mosaics. I love mosaics. I mention that a lot. I love mosaics. But just thought some of you might appreciate this, that even the United States contributed to the construction of this facility. And if you notice in this one kind of square, you can see the United States emblem there in the mosaic up on the ceiling. So it truly is a church constructed by all nations. All right, we have a few minutes left. I'm going to hit the highlights of this last one, okay? I want to talk about the old, and remember, every time I do it, I put in quote, the old city of Jerusalem, okay? This is not a coverage of anything biblical inside the city of Jerusalem. This is an overview of the old city as it exists today. Okay, just to give you an introduction. In later lessons, I don't know how many more we'll have, one or two, we will look at specific archaeology in and around the old city of Jerusalem. Okay, but tonight, just for 5 or 10 minutes, I want to talk about the city itself today. Okay, the city that is referred to as the old city of Jerusalem is not the city of Jerusalem from the time of Jesus. Okay. Old city is relative, okay? For example, the walls that are around the old city were built in 1536, the 16th century, okay? Clearly, that's not from Bible times, okay? So when you're looking at the walls of the old city, you're not looking at the walls that Jesus, when he was in Jerusalem, he was within. But it's all relative. I mean, there was one night that we went from the hotel to Jerusalem and walked around at night, and one of the girls made a comment about, these not being, as old as the Bible, which they're not, the walls. But I said, but they're older than America, so they're old, they're just not Bible old, okay? The walls were actually built by the Turks in the 16th century. The city today is a tell, Now, no one ever refers to it as Tell Jerusalem, but it's essentially a tell. It is a mound that has been built up over time through layers and layers and layers of strata from different eras. And so there is not a ton of archaeology in the city of Jerusalem today. Why? Because there is a city on top of the tell. All the archaeology that has been done, with the exception of the Temple Mount, built on a mountain, Mount Moriah, but everything else that's been discovered in the city of Jerusalem has been discovered by going down, or in some cases coming in from the sides, right? Anything else would be, I mean, if they were going to do mass excavation, they would destroy a bustling city, okay? The city, the old city, it's a square kilometer, has about 50,000 people, and it is divided into four quarters. The city divided into quarters, Armenian, Christian, Jewish, Muslim. It is surrounded by that wall built in the 16th century. The wall has eight gates. One of those gates, the Golden Gate or the Mercy Gate, has been sealed since medieval times. This is a map of the city of the old city of Jerusalem today. You'll notice the quarters. You've got the Muslim quarter in the upper right-hand corner. This would be the northeastern corner. Then you have the Temple Mount here, which there's the Dome of the Rock. We'll talk about that in a minute on there. You have the Jewish quarter in the southeastern corner. You have the Armenian quarter and the Christian quarter. In the Christian quarter is where the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is, among other things. Now, this is the same picture I just showed you before, but this is a view of the old city, okay? You see the wall here, which was built in the 16th century by the Turks, surrounding the old city of Jerusalem. And by far the most prominent item on the skyline of the old city is what is known of as the Dome of the Rock. This is the structure here with the golden dome, built by the Muslims in the 7th century. Muslims overtook the city of Jerusalem in the 7th century, and the Dome of the Rock was completed at the very end of the 7th century in 691 and 692 AD. Drilling in a little closer, this is the Dome of the Rock. This is a shrine that was built, again, I said at the end of the 7th century, 691, 692, according to the Quran. Muhammad visited the Temple Mount, and this is where he ascended into heaven. And so this shrine was built by Muslims to honor his ascension. But it's also built on top of, the reason why it's called the Dome of the Rock, is it is built on top of what is known as the foundation stone. The foundation stone is the traditional stone upon which Abraham was going to sacrifice Ishmael. In the Quran, it's Ishmael, not Isaac. And so that is the traditional spot. We know from Scripture that the temple was built on Mount Moriah, which is, unless the names are used interchangeably, was the place where Abraham was going to sacrifice Isaac. And so traditionally in their belief, and by the Quran, they believe this is where Abraham was going to sacrifice Ishmael. This is, again, the most prominent item in the skyline of the old city. I mentioned there are eight gates. I'm not going to show you pictures of all eight, but I'll show you a few of them. This is the Mercy Gate. You'll notice that it is completely sealed up. This is a gate that you cannot go in. It's been sealed up for hundreds of years. This is going to be a good, this has got flashcards for me. This is Herod's Gate. This is on the northern side of the old city. This goes into the Muslim quarter. This is the Lion's Gate. How do we know that? Because there's lions up on top of the gate. This also goes into the Muslim quarter, but this is on the eastern side of the city. This is also known of as St. Stephen's Gate. Why? Because this is the traditional spot where Stephen was stoned. Again, traditional. We have no idea where Stephen was when he was stoned in Acts chapter 7, but the traditional spot, this goes into the Muslim quarter. This would have been roughly the location in the city in Jesus' time of the Sheep Gate that is mentioned in John 5, where the Pool of Bethesda was. How do we know that? Well, because just inside this gate is where the remains of the Pool of Bethesda is today, that we'll talk about later. This is Zion's Gate. This is on the southwestern side of the city. And you see all these holes all over the wall and drilling in closer, you see those holes? You know what those are? Bullet holes. Bullet holes. This is just a reminder that over the centuries, this has been a place of intense conflict. And so there are reminders, reminders of the conflicts that have taken place. This is Jaffa Gate. This is in the, again, kind of southwestern side of the city. This is right on the edge of the Jewish quarter and the Armenian quarter. And finally, I think this is the last one I have here. This is by far the busiest gate in the city. This is known of as the Damascus Gate. And this goes into the north. This is on the north side of the city. This goes into the Muslim quarter, which is by far the most bustling quarter in the city. It's actually the most fascinating one to walk through, from my opinion. This, though, underneath the Damascus Gate, you have a gate that doesn't go back to the time of Jesus, but goes back to the time of the second century, in the time when Jerusalem was fortified by the Roman Emperor Hadrian. And so this gate down here, below the modern day or the 16th century Damascus Gate, you have a second century gate that goes back to the time of the Emperor Hadrian. Now, this is inside the Damascus Gate. You notice how many people there are crowded around the gate. Shops, merchants all over the place. I'm just going to breeze through here just to show you some sights from the city of Jerusalem. Many of these are from the Muslim quarter, just showing like there's just open air shops all around the streets. I saw this little open door and I stuck my head and took a picture where they were making fresh bread. Smelled incredible, by the way. Coptic Christians walking, in this case, walking through the Muslim quarter, carrying a cross. Arab family walking through the marketplace. Again, just some of the sights of the marketplaces. While this is not the city of Jesus, this is a fun city to photograph. It is also a melting pot. I mean, Jews, Muslims, Christians, Armenians, all in one small area, blended together. Just candy. Who wants to grab a handful of candy with everybody else that's touched all that? Olives, any kind of flavor of olive that you want there. That's the strangest looking cauliflower I have ever seen, but I'm not sure I would want to try that. But just all kinds of things. And then this is sitting by the Damascus Gate, ladies who are selling their fresh goods there by the Damascus Gate. One thing you do see, not just in Jerusalem, but all over Israel, is police are armed and with machine guns. Both police and military, everyone, male and female, citizen of Israel, has to serve in the military. And one of the things you see, oh, a couple of cat pictures here. There's cats in Jerusalem as well. But one of the things you see in Jerusalem is you will see big groups of soldiers being led about the city. And one of the reasons why they do this is because they are teaching them about the culture of the city. Because within the city, there are different cultures. And sometimes those cultures don't mix as well as other times. And they want them to understand the culture. Like, here are things you do and don't do. And so they will be part of their training in going into military service is to spend time in the city of Jerusalem and be trained on how to deal with the different cultures. This is moving into the Jewish quarter. There's a man standing out there playing his violin. The Haraman synagogue there in the middle of the Jewish quarter with a replica of the menorah there in front of that, the candlestick. And then finally, this is actually some archaeology, though not biblical archaeology. This is kind of one level below the main level of the city. From the 5th century when the Byzantines moved in to the city of Jerusalem and they built a cardo, which is means the heart of the city, and this columns that are there in the middle of the city, both inside, covered by city above it, and then outside that have been exposed from the 5th century A.D. All right, I went a little bit over, but not as far as I thought. So that's the last slide. That was just an overview, though. Future lessons, we will drill into specific places within the city that are biblical. We'll look at a couple of traditional sites, but we're largely going to focus on the biblical discoveries within the city of Jerusalem. Going back to the Mount of Olives and the things that, you know, it reminds us about the last week of Jesus' life. And Jesus came to Jerusalem during that last week to fulfill his mission. His mission, which we know had been planned from the very beginning, which was for him to die for us. And that those of us who have accepted that, we believe that not only did he die, but he came out of that tomb. He went in the tomb on Friday. He came out of the tomb on Sunday. And then 40 days later, he ascended into heaven while the apostles watched there on the Mount of Olives. And we believe that he's coming again. We believe that he's coming again. And we believe that he is the only one who can save us. That plan that God had, for which he submitted himself, even though he had a desire for it to be taken from him, he did it anyway. He did it anyway. He did that for us. And now it's just up to us to accept that sacrifice, to decide we're going to follow him instead of ourselves. And if you're here tonight and you've never made that decision, I encourage you to do that. To be baptized into his death, to come out of the water ready to live a new life for Jesus. If there's anything else we can do for you, please come while Ricky leads us in our invitation song.